It's time for us now to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning. We also rebroadcast Arthur on the weekend and following our 12 new news as well. Good morning, Arthur. Hope you had a great weekend.
I had a very pleasant, calm weekend. I cooked too much, probably, because it's funny. I really want to go out to eat on a Monday when everything's closed. Recuperating from the weekend. But I actually did get to go out last week. I prefer lunch to dinner. And I went with a neighbor and Bob to my favorite Brooklyn restaurant, I gotta say. It's the Azerbaijani restaurant in, I guess you'd say that's Midwood. It's Coney Island Avenue and Avenue P. It's called Village Cafe. It does not sound like a Central Asian restaurant, but it is. And my problem with restaurants, you know, being carb-free, well, not quite free, but very, very low-carb diet, is it's hard to go to a restaurant and eat the way I want to eat. But Azerbaijanis are known for their grilled meat. And in this place, you know, I never order grilled chicken in a restaurant. I eat enough of that at home. But in this place, I do, because their chicken is sensational. It's boneless thighs on a skewer. They also have unbelievable lamb chops, little ones, little rib chops that you could eat with, by holding them. They have a lot of things, including a lot of wonderful salads. So I did have a very nice restaurant meal last week, and my old friends, the manager and the waiter, were there, and everybody had warm greetings, and they suffered a lot during the pandemic, but they're getting back. And that day, there was an office party at the next table. There really were at lunchtime. There's never any big crowd, but there was a big group of having an office party. Anyway, but back on the ranch, so to speak, here in my kitchen, I actually have been making ranch dressing. Marshall.
Yes.
Do you eat ranch dressing?
Occasionally.
It is now the number one salad dressing in America. And it wasn't even invented, until the 1950s. And I read it this morning, but now I'm forgetting his name. But this gentleman who had already created this dressing for friends and family bought a ranch in Santa Barbara to do a dude ranch. He and his wife opened a dude ranch. And it was called Hidden Valley Ranch. Ha ha.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So he made this salad dressing, and it got to be such a thing that eventually it went into a bottle. I shouldn't say sadly, but I have to say it's now owned by the Clorox Company, which doesn't make it sound like an appetizing thing to eat. But it got bought out years ago. And there's both Hidden Valley Ranch in a dressing in a bottle, and there's Hidden Valley Ranch dry powder that you mix into whatever. I didn't even look at the packet. They didn't have it in my market. Make your own dressing, ha-ha, your own. But I have been making my own. Now, I went online to find, you know, the recipes, and there are a zillion recipes. So I sort of created my own. If you look it up, ranch dressing online, you'll find that there are a variety of ingredients that can or cannot go in it. Mine is equal measure of mayonnaise, buttermilk. By the way, this is another one of those things that started out as how am I going to use up this buttermilk that I bought? mayonnaise, buttermilk, and sour cream. And it's not Hidden Valley Ranch, but I am using an organic sour cream that is a little looser than, say, Breakstones, or other big, well-distributed brands. Daisy is a little bit more like what the consistency of Organic Valley is what I'm buying. So equal measure. Let's say a third of a cup, a third of a cup, a third of a cup. You got a cup of dressing, except you're going to add stuff that'll make it a little bit more than a third than a full cup. For a cup of mixture, and I whisk that together in a little bowl. I add about a teaspoon, could be a shot or two more, of Worcestershire sauce. At the end, you'll taste it and decide yourself. A teaspoon and a half of salt. A generous half a teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. And that's sort of the base of your dressing. You can put a shot of Tabasco in there. My audience doesn't like that. You could put a, let's say, half teaspoon of powdered mustard in there. I didn't think it was necessary. I wanted a nice fresh flavor because now I'm adding my herbs. Now I had dill, parsley, and chives, and I chopped them. I must say I had about 3 tablespoons of each. That's quite a lot. Could be 2 tablespoons. And I blended into the 1 cup of dressing base. And then another day, I happened to have some basil in the house, so I used some of that. I added about a couple, you know, let's say 3 tablespoons of chopped basil. And I must say, not necessary. I really love the dill, parsley, and chive combination. And maybe you can use more chives than the other two herbs. Depends on how many chives. If you have chives in the garden, you can go crazy with chives. So, and that's my Hidden Valley. And it's not my Hidden Valley. That's my ranch dressing. But the thing about Hidden Valley Ranch is it's made ranch dressing the number one salad dressing in America. And a friend of ours, Marshall, this morning told me that she cannot eat creamy salad dressings. But I think if you looked at the ingredients in the Hidden Valley Ranch bottle, you wouldn't eat it either. And the reason people, I think, don't like creamy salad, if you claim you don't like a creamy salad dressing, maybe it's because you only eat creamy salad dressings out of a bottle, and they all contain guar gum and some kind of starch, and they're really gloppy and I think not a very pleasant texture at all. This has a very pleasant creamy texture. And I used it on my BLT. So I'm not eating bread. I am eating bread, but very sparely. But it's tomato season finally. So I really do crave a bacon, lettuce, and tomato combination. And I figure, without the bread, you know, it's not going to be the same, but it could be very good. And it is. So I shred up my iceberg. Oh, by the way, I only use iceberg lettuce for this. If you want to use romaine, I'll give you that. But a soft lettuce does not belong under this heap of what I'm going to tell you. You want a crisp, juicy lettuce, and that's iceberg. And I'm glad to see that iceberg, I think iceberg is coming back after many, many, many decades of being disparaged. It all started, by the way, with Craig Claiborne back in the 1960s, and he sort of dismissed iceberg altogether. And 30 years later, when a very, very highly respected food person named Marion Cunningham became a California lady, became a spokesperson for iceberg lettuce, people's eyebrows raised to the heavens. How could a person so respected in the food world advertise iceberg lettuce? Well, here I am touting iceberg lettuce, and I was very happy to hear that Valerie Bertinelli the other day on TV was also touting iceberg lettuce. So I like Valerie Bertinelli. She's cute, and she cooks. So anyway, I shred up the iceberg lettuce, put that on a plate, slice up the tomatoes, but certainly up there in this three-ingredient recipe. Now, tomatoes. So everywhere you go these days, there are heirloom tomatoes. My line on this is they're heirloom for a reason. They were susceptible to fungus. they didn't transport well, maybe they had no flavor anyway. There are a lot of reasons why people stopped growing these varieties of tomatoes that we now call heirloom, which of course gives them the aura of tastes like grandma's. Well, grandma didn't like these tomatoes, and that's why they hybridized tomatoes, by the way, you know, in a terrible, terrible way, so that they could be transported, so they could roll down the conveyor belt. I mean, they had all these things other than flavor and texture in mind when they were hybridizing them. And when I was a kid, you'll remember this because you're old enough, we bought tomatoes in this little cardboard sleeve yep. with cellophane over it, yep. and they were like hockey pucks. You know, they were really horrible tomatoes from Florida. So nowadays you get these heirloom tomatoes. They're just as horrible. I go for your basic New Jersey beefsteak or other kinds, other varieties of tomato. It doesn't have to be grown in New Jersey either, by the way. But a normal commercial tomato grown well has and in July and August, out of the field, even sometimes out of a greenhouse, but out of the field, has sensational flavor. Or not. But in any case, it's a great tomato. It'll have good textures for nothing else. So I slice those or wedge them, depending on my mood, and put them on top of the iceberg lettuce. It's a composed salad, so to speak. And then there's the bacon. So I have been baking bacon, meaning I lay out the slices on a rack on a sheet pan, and I put it in a 400-degree oven. And depending on the bacon and the thickness of the bacon, it can take anywhere from about 20 minutes, 17 to 20 minutes, to even a half an hour to get really crisp. You want, for a BLT, you want it crisp, I think. If you don't want it crisp, then you'll know when to pull it out because, you know, Bob even says, I sometimes like it when it's crisp in places but still a little chewy with the fat here and there. You know, it depends on your taste. I like it crisp because I like to crumble this bacon over my tomatoes and lettuce. But first I put on the dressing, and I'll use my ranch dressing. This is a great dressing for a BLT salad. Lettuce, tomato, ranch dressing, not Hidden Valley, but homemade ranch dressing, and crumbled bacon. Now, yes, I miss the bread, but I'll live with it as long as I lose a pound and a half a week, which is what what my rate more or less is. And you too, Marshall, right? About a pound and a half a week.
Yeah, pound and a half. Yeah, it varies. Like you run into those weeks where you don't lose anything, but then all of a sudden you lose like 4 pounds. So yeah, about pound
exactly.
and a half, 2 pounds
and also,
a week.
Right, with the weather, we have an extremely humid day here. I haven't looked to see how humid, but it's very. I can feel it. And I also know by the scale, I haven't weighed myself today, but I do know that on a day like today, my body holds on to all of its fluids. And my weight could go up. That's what happened, by the way, on a really hot, humid day. Your body wants to retain. So you will not lose weight, in fact. So one of my go-to meals lately, because it's totally friendly, keto-friendly, is chili. And, you know, I mentioned, I think just last week, this little Christmas Gifts from the Kitchen book that I, 48-page book that I found in my bookcase. I mean, I knew about it all along, but I rediscovered it. And I'm really reading the other recipes, not just my Barney's Rock and Rye recipe. Some people gave recipes that I don't know, I don't understand how you would be giving this as a gift from your kitchen, including Jane Butel. Now, Jane Butel, well, I always think of as the first lady of Southwest cooking. She introduced all these Southwest ingredients. I think she's from Oklahoma originally or Arizona, she lives in New Mexico now for a long time. And she has a company. I looked her up online, and Jane is not only still with us, but she's teaching online. And I saw that she had you pay for these online lessons, but it's $50 for a class, Jane Butel, B-U-T-E-L, and the name of her company is Pecos, P-E-C-O-S, Pecos Valley Spice Company. And in this little book, she offered a recipe for Pecos Valley chili. And it is the simplest possible chili, meat chili, and I just had to make it. So I did that the other day. She calls for 3 pounds of meat. You know, I thought that was a bit much. We're only two here. So I made 2 pounds of meat, and it went for like three meals. And there's nothing in this except meat and chili, which is what intrigued me. And I know that this is, in fact, what is as close as possible to the original chili, Tex chili. It's a Texas dish. It's not a Mexican dish. Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma chili, made off the back of the mess wagon when they did cattle roundups and on the range. This is real range cooking in a black iron pot. And all you do, no, I'll tell you what I did. I mean, I didn't follow Jane's recipe absolutely exactly, but here's what I did. I sauteed a large onion in a little bit of vegetable oil. I mean, she only called for one tablespoon. That is not enough for a large onion. Two tablespoons of vegetable oil. And I sauteed the onion until it was very tender over low heat. And then I added three large cloves of garlic, finely chopped, stirred that in. And then I added my 2 pounds of stew meat, which I had cut into more or less one-inch cubes, small cubes. When you buy stew meat, it's usually in very large cubes, so I had to cut up each cube into at least three or four pieces. So that's a little meditative work there of cutting up the meat. And then you throw the meat in with the onion and garlic, and you saute the meat until, like with chopped meat, it's lost all its raw color. And then you add chili powder. Now, I used maybe too much. For 2 pounds of meat, I used a quarter of a cup of my homemade chili powder. I'll get to that in a second. And you stir that around for a few minutes. Let the chili, you know, mix in with the fat from the meat and the oil. And 2 cups of water. That's the only liquid in here. 2 cups of water. And as I did this in a four-quart cast iron pot, two cups of water was the right amount to cover all the meat generously. And as it cooks, of course, the liquid will reduce. And in the end, you'll end up with a very flavorful sauce for the meat. I actually broke up some of the meat to make some of it a little shredded. The meat, it cooked for 3 hours until the meat was really, really fork tender. Anyway, I use the same proportions as I do when I use ground meat. However, I see now, and when I make a ground meat chili, my standard chili, I also use tomatoes. And if I'm willing to eat a few carbs, some beans. For 2 pounds of meat, I'd use one can of dark red kidney beans. So that's modifying the heat from the chili, the beans, the tomatoes. And interestingly, Jane, whose recipe this is, Jane Butel, says as a note on the recipe that if you want beans to substitute, I think she says 1 cup of her 3 cups of liquid water, substitute it with 1 cup of tomato puree. So, and then you add the beans, pinto beans she's recommending. So I felt at the end, I loved the heat and intensity of the chili, but it was very intense, and it was hotter than usual, and I realized it's because it didn't have those ingredients to modify the heat. So anyway, I liked it. It's very pure. It's what they used to call a bowl of red, and when they said red, they did not mean tomatoes. They meant chilies. And if you want to try this, I didn't add anything but chili powder. Jane has you add a small amount of cumin. But I have a friend who listens to these podcasts who doesn't eat cumin. And I thought, well, let me try this without cumin. Is it okay? It was great. It didn't need her small amount, you know, for how much she was making. It was a minuscule amount. Anyway, I didn't add any oregano, which I usually do to my ground meat chili. And it was, like I say, pure, like right up the back of a mess wagon. Now we get to some serious business. In the New York Times this past Sunday, in the magazine yesterday, I read it on Saturday, was a big, big story on GMOs. And I've talked about this before, only from the point of view that way too many products in the supermarket are labeled non-GMO. And, you know, you wonder, why do they have to tell us there aren't GMOs? When in fact, and I learned from this article, almost nothing that we buy is a GMO, is genetically modified organism. Almost nothing that consumers buy are made with genetically modified organisms. Now, what do they mean by that? They mean that they take a gene from some other plant or organism and implant it in the organism they're trying to change, and hope for the best. Now, the best is, according to this story, and I'm sure it's accurate, I thought one of the best things was for us consumers, is that baked potatoes, russet potatoes, are frequently genetically modified, and what it does is it produces a lower levels of I can't even pronounce it, but it becomes a carcinogen. This element in a russet potato, in a normal, unmodified potato, becomes a carcinogen when it's fried. How many kids do you know that are not living off of French fried potatoes? So wouldn't we be happy if we now have a potato that doesn't do that? In the beginning, however, of genetically modified organisms, the main organisms that were being modified were soybeans and corn and rye and big crops. For instance, they'd have genetically modified a kind of rice, so that you don't need to use a pesticide when growing it. And there's another kind of rice that they've modified so that it can live in water a lot longer than non-modified rice. And why is that important? Because in a lot of the countries in Southeast Asia, for instance, where rice is grown prolifically, I mean, a main crop, they're having climate change effects that cause floods and flood fields and last for way longer than the week that is normal for the growing cycle of rice. So this rice can live longer. It's, you know, it's going to help to feed the world. And as the story says, being against GMOs is like an anti-vaxxer, it's related to anti-vaxxers. It's not based on science at all. It's based on fear. And the problem, and I'm sure this is the case in this, according to the story, is that since GMOs started out as something for like companies like Monsanto to make more money and to increase commercial viability, and also they did some ugly things, like Monsanto had a patent on their modified soybeans, and you know normally farmers would save seed to plant the next year. Well, Monsanto didn't allow you to save soybeans to plant the next year with their modified version of the soybean. You had to buy them again. So ugly things like that happened in the beginning, but we got to get over it. And as the story, I'm going to quote this story now. For the majority of people, the anxiety around GMOs is almost entirely untethered to an understanding of what's happening at a scientific level. But that, meaning they're not understanding, makes the anxiety harder to address rather than easier. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So I don't know, as the governor of Alabama said, she did everything she could think of to get people vaccinated. And anybody has some new ideas? So GMOs, I think the first thing to do is we should not allow companies that have products that do not use GMOs to put a label on saying we don't have GMOs. I used to say, you know, I want to know what's in it, what's not in it. So it's not a GMO, then what is it? So if it's just don't tell me this is a non-GMO banana. I think that's one way to change it. The marketing of non-GMOs has caused people to think that it's something horrible, and it isn't something horrible. That's sort of the crux of this whole very long story in the Times magazine. And by the way, on the cover of the magazine is a fruit that I think we're supposed to think is beautiful, but it's bizarre. To me, it looks like a purple pomegranate. Whatever it is, it has twice the antioxidants of blueberries. It's blue. Extends the lifespan of cancer-prone mice, and it's a natural anti-inflammatory. So all those are benefits of a GMO. And the story, by the way, is pegged to some scientific research on a purple tomato. So it's an interesting story, even if you're not so interested in agriculture. Anyway, I'm off to figure out what to eat today when it's going to be 90 degrees and it's already like 95% humidity. I finished the bowl of bread. I have a drop of ranch dressing left. I made a big, big batch the other day because it does keep for several days in the fridge. I would not keep it, my version, too long because you're using fresh herbs. And I forgot the most important ingredient. One clove of garlic grated into the base of sour cream, buttermilk, and the mayonnaise. I'm glad I thought of that. The garlic is really important, but just one clove is enough if you grate it in. And what I wanted to say is it is better if you let it chill and sit in the refrigerator for at least 4 or 5 hours. When you taste it first, you won't taste a lot of garlic, but the garlic will permeate after resting in the refrigerator. And the herbs will also give the base a nice flavor. I really do like this dressing, mainly for all the herbs that I can put in it. Of course, you could do an oil and vinegar and put a ton of herbs in, too. I think my time is up.
Time is up, but my favorite dressing is someone makes a classic Italian dressing, and also I have a dressing that's a comeback dressing. It's just a mayonnaise and ketchup.
Oh, no, we love Russian dressing. I call that Russian dressing. Yeah. Sometimes I make it quite elaborately and call it Thousand Island. There's a great recipe for Thousand Island dressing in my book, New York City Food. If you own that book, take a look. And it has a great history, story of Thousand Island dressing, too. But, yeah, I do that all the time. Mayonnaise, ketchup. I put a spoonful of relish in.
Yep.
And sometimes, if I really want to do elaborate, I put in a minced shallot and some chopped parsley. Yeah, that's a great salad. By the way, a wedge, you know, let's not forget. Now, I laugh when I go to a restaurant and I see $11 for a wedge of iceberg lettuce, as if that's some kind of special thing. But, and there are a lot of different by the way, that base that I make for the ranch dressing, you could use also as a blue cheese dressing. Just crumble blue cheese into it. And I would add some chives.
All right.
All right. So next week we'll see what I come up with. You know, I'm drinking again more than eating. So maybe I should do my cocktails next week.
All right.
A little promo for next week.
Okay, Arthur, we'll speak to you next week.
Take care.
Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.